Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 2-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. Today, I'm talking to the founder of Voices of Survivors Foundation, Lynn Lane. He is a prostate cancer survivor, and he's giving back to the cancer community in so many ways. I'm excited to talk to him today. Let's meet him right now. How are you today, Lynn?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Great. Now that I got your name right, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I'm 43 years old. I was diagnosed 2 years ago. On April 9th was my diagnosis date of prostate cancer. I was way too young to have prostate cancer. There was no one in my family that had there was no family history for prostate cancer. Other cancers, yes, not prostate cancer.
How did you find out?
I was misdiagnosed for 6 to 8 years. They were saying that I had benign prostate hyperplasia. I guess it was closer to 8 years. I ended up firing 4 doctors because I knew something was wrong. They were giving me Flomax constantly, which is a medication to help reduce the size of your prostate if you have an enlarged prostate to be able to go to the bathroom a little easier. But Flomax has never shrunk cancer before. So for years, my cancer continued to grow and close off the urethra. A few years ago, prior to my diagnosis, they did a biopsy on my prostate, but they did half of the core samples that they normally do, and the core samples all came up negative. So they missed the cancer.
Why did they do half?
It was an older way. They used to only do 6 core samples, and now they typically do 12.
Oh, okay.
And so he was just following old protocol. You know, it's looking back on it now, it's incredibly frustrating, especially given the situation where I am. So I look back on it, and, you know, and I went through the process. I literally fired 4 doctors because no one was getting anything right. Finally, I went to the top doctors in New York, and Dr. Simon Hall, he's the head of prostate cancer research at Mount Sinai, he watched me for a year or so, even though my PSA level was elevated. Since it was negative on the PSA, and when he would do the digital rectal exam, he wasn't feeling anything. My prostate still felt spongy like it should. It was enlarged. And typically what you look at on a PSA is numbers when they start doubling. Mine wasn't doubling, but mine was steadily increasing over a point a year. So finally it got up to 6.7, a PSA, which is incredibly high for someone my age. And he did another biopsy, and they found prostate cancer.
So now what stage was that when you were diagnosed?
They thought initially that I was, it's a 1. It's not stage 1, stage 2. Ours is a little more complicated. But it was T1C. They thought it was a certain amount, but it was still encapsulated. It hadn't broken through the capsule. So they did we went in, I was given quite a few different options on what type of treatment that I would have. Do radiation, radioactive seed implant, different types of surgery, open, robotic, laparoscopic. And so I went with a robotic surgery, and I went with Dr. Samadi, who's actually on our advisory board for Voices of Survivors. And he's the top prostate cancer surgeon basically in the world. He's the guy to go to. And so I went with him. We went with a robotic surgery. And when they did the pathology
report, that means what? Because I'm not. That means they use a little.
It's really fascinating. He's not near me. He's actually on the other side of the room. I have 7 holes in my body, and there's a couple are from the 3 are from the cameras, 2 are from drains, and 2 are from the robotic arms that are inside me while they're performing the surgery. And he's on the other side of the room with his head in this device, and he's looking at a 3-dimensional image of my inside. And he's able to operate these laparoscopic arms from, you know, that are controlled by the robot from across the room. And it's incredibly accurate the way the surgery is done.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I chose him because he's done, you know, at that point he had done, I believe, 1,500 surgeries. He was doing around 500 to 600 a year, shifting into that. And he teaches the robot. He teaches most people how to use the da Vinci system on the East Coast, and the da Vinci system is the robotic system he used. But I went with that because I'm young, and I wanted to make sure that I had nerve-sparing surgery so I would still be able to have an erection, have sex, but I would not end up with incontinence because those are really big problems with prostate cancer.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I ended up okay. I have no erectile dysfunction. I have zero incontinence, and I'm functioning, you know, the way that I would have hoped to have come from it. Downside was is they thought all of my cancer was contained within the prostate. When they did the pathology report after the surgery, they saw that I actually, they thought it was 20-30% on one side unilateral of the prostate.
Okay.
When they did the pathology report, it was 70% bilateral, and I ended up with focal positive margins where it was starting to come out of the prostate.
Oh, my goodness.
So, and metastatic prostate cancer is really really a bad thing to have. And so it's pretty scary. I kind of live with this every 3 months, wondering. I go back to get tested every 3 months.
Scanophobia, as a friend of mine called it.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. And so now looking at that, you know, the surgeon that I chose, he's pretty amazing. Even though I had focal positive margin, he did a really wide spectrum on the surgery. So he removed all of the surrounding tissue in the prosthetic bed, the seminal vesicles, a section of the urethra, a sphincter valve on the urethra, the prostate, and lymph nodes. So if it was minor focal margins coming out of the prostate bed, we're hoping that he got it when he went wide on removing all the tissue. I always call it's like a male version of a complete hysterectomy.
Right. That's what it sounds like. It sounds like there's not much left of your prostate down there.
Yeah, no, they took prostate, seminal vesicles, everything. I mean, you know, just from a graphic standpoint, and I'm incredibly honest about what my journey's been, what my experience is, that I have no erectile dysfunction. I can have sex normally, but when I do have sex, I don't produce an ejaculate. Nothing comes out.
Yeah.
When I have orgasms, but just nothing comes out. And so when I went into this, getting ready to go into the surgery, I had 3 weeks to make a decision if I wanted to freeze sperm.
Right.
If I froze eggs, we would be having a whole other conversation. So I froze my sperm, but in those 3 weeks, I had to wait a week and a half for the blood to stop from all the biopsies.
Oh.
So it was pretty, you know, so I ended up doing it. And so now I have some really cool kids frozen up in New York if I ever decide to unfreeze them.
That's funny. I love your sense of humor, and I really love the fact that you fired your doctors, because I always talk about you have to be proactive, and if you don't like your doctor, and if you don't like what they're telling you, find another opinion.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You've seen on my Facebook page that I recently went in for breast exams. I've had two mammograms this year. I had some pain in my breast. The doctor, I got a new primary care doctor. He was giving me a complete physical, and he found a couple of lumps in my right breast. They were kind of painful. He did an ultrasound. I went over and had a mammogram done six months ago, and then they just did it again. Fingers crossed, they didn't find anything. Typically, a lot of hormonal changes happen sometimes with people who've had prostate cancer.
Oh.
And since it's a hormonal cancer, there is a correlation between male breast cancer and prostate cancer that occurs.
Oh.
So they're watching me. But it's one of those, you know, I'm that person that says, if something's wrong, get it checked out. Don't be embarrassed, especially a guy. Don't be embarrassed if you have a lump in your breast. Get in there and get it checked out, because a mammogram doesn't hurt. At least it didn't hurt me. So.
Well, and that's one of the things that a lot of women say. It's like, oh, well, mammogram hurts. It's like, well, I would rather know and have a biopsy and have an ultrasound than be like, oh, well, it's fine. Don't worry about it. We'll wait and see. It's like, well, let's not wait and see. Because, like, you know, you're young when you were diagnosed. I was young when I was diagnosed. We, as people in the cancer community, see so many more people who are younger than us in their late 20s. Early 30s who are being diagnosed with all sorts of different cancers. You need to don't wait and see. I would rather tell my doctor, let's get it checked, than just say, okay, well, I'll just come back in 6 months and whatever.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, that's one of the things. And I'm a really strong advocate for self-advocacy.
Oh, yes.
And I did pretty well. But to be honest, I was that guy when they said, well, you don't have prostate cancer, I was relieved. And it took me a little bit to get to the point where I was like, you know what? I'm not going to be relieved because something's not right. And And I just I learned to be my own best advocate a little later than I wish I would have, but now I get the importance of it. And I wish I could get out there and purport that I was the best from the very onset of when I started having problems. But I wasn't. I was scared just like everybody else. And I wanted to bury my head in the sand, and sometimes I did.
But I think it's good that you're coming out and saying that, because I'm sure there's a lot of people like you. Like, when I found my lump, I was actually in the process of getting insurance and going to the doctor, and I would have gone to the doctor anyway. But I'm sure there's a lot of people like you who said, oh, I don't have cancer. Whew. Well, I'll just, you know, I'll go along with my normal life. And, you know, hopefully somebody will hear this and say, well, maybe I, you know, I'm not feeling right, even though the doctor said it's okay.
Yeah, exactly. And keep pushing. If, you know, if something's not right, the doctor says it's one thing, but and they try to treat you and the symptoms aren't changing, find another doctor.
Exactly.
Because obviously there's something else going on that they're not getting right. And I, you know, I've had doctors say, well, this is just the way it's going to be. You're going to have to live this way. And if I would have listened to that, I wouldn't make it to the age of, I would probably wouldn't have made it to the age of 45 when you're supposed to normally get tested for prostate cancer.
Exactly.
Because they were just saying, this is just going to be your life, Len. This is what you can expect from living. I said, no way. This is not what I can expect from living.
Well, yeah. And then you want to turn the tables on the doctor and say, well, is this what you would want? And
right.
They'd be like, well,
yeah. You know, everything, it's an interesting process because, you know, a lot of what I do, especially with our organization, is to try to get people, try to talk about things that the doctors don't tell you and some of the side effects, et cetera.
Oh, yes.
And the treatments that we go through.
So tell me about your organization, Voices of Survivors. Like, how did it come about?
Well, it came about, I'm a documentary filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
I've done some pretty significant type work out there. And when I was diagnosed, I was working on a film on mountaintop removal mining in West Virginia and southern Appalachia. And at the same time, there was two setbacks. My sister had a brain tumor, and she went into surgery. And so we stopped our trips to southern Appalachia to kind of deal with that. And my mother was helping my sister. And then I was diagnosed with cancer shortly thereafter. So it kind of put that film on hold. But I know the power of media and stuff. And I've done a lot of video blogs on different projects that I've done.
Right.
And so when I was diagnosed, there was no support group for me. I was a young guy with prostate cancer. The only people that I was finding with prostate cancer were older support groups that I wasn't connecting to. Because I didn't have incontinence or erectile dysfunction, they just really weren't interested in talking to me, it felt like.
What?
So I went online, and because the prostate cancer support groups, typically a lot of times
older.
That's what they deal with, or the side effects of the surgery, et cetera, or radiation treatment or whatever, at least the groups that I found. I recently found one in Houston that's really awesome. That isn't like that, and it's a lot of fun to go to.
What is that one that we can plug?
I knew you would ask me, and I'm having a brain fart. It's Us Too. That's the name of the organization. It's Us Too. And they're an awesome organization. They bring in a lot of great speakers. And, you know, it's a good group of guys, all ages, that get together and talk about what they're going through. One of my friends in Houston that I met through Voices of Survivors, he's a young guy, Scott, with prostate cancer. And he took me to the meeting, and I can't thank him enough for it. It's been really good. And for guys out there looking for something, find your local Us Too chapter, because they're a great group. And so Voices of Survivors, so back to that. So when I was diagnosed, I would look around online, because that's what we do. That's our generation. We look online for support. And I found an organization run by Heidi Adams called Planet Cancer, which recently became a part of Livestrong. And so Planet Cancer is kind of like a MySpace for cancer people, primarily young adults. But I was the only prostate guy on there. So I quickly learned that we all have a common experience. And that common experience is, you heard those three words, you have cancer, and life changes.
Exactly.
And so my support came from everyone, you know, from AML, astrocytoma, glioblastoma, anything but prostate cancer. And so I started looking at my survivorship in a different way, that I can't look at the type of cancer that I have. I just have to look at, I have cancer, and we're all the same.
Right, we are.
So that summer, I had my surgery on May 12th, 2008. And that summer, I started hooking up with some people that I met through Planet Cancer, and I wanted to start a video blog. It's just a real simple video blog where people would talk about what being a survivor meant to them. And I launched the site. It was just a website. It wasn't an organization. I think it was just a project. On November 25th of 2008. And I was getting, in December, I was getting ready to go to San Francisco to shoot some people for the project and visit some friends and stuff out there. And I received an email from a woman from Dallas who had a friend who was diagnosed with cancer, a young, kind of punk rocky alternative girl who decided, took the kind of rebellious attitude, screw it, I'm not going to go through oncology, I'm not taking chemo, mm-hmm. not doing any of that.
Right.
You know, she was being rebellious. So the woman, and I have no idea how she found my website, because it was literally just a blog or a vlog. And she showed it to her, and she must have connected. I think she connected with Mish, the second person that I shot, who I believe she was 27 then. And she was a single mother, kind of edgy, some tattoos, real into anime and stuff. And I think she connected with that person. That's who I think she did.
That's awesome.
But she said, you know what, I'm going to be a survivor. And she saw those videos, and she sought out her oncologist and went back and decided to seek treatment. And I realized, you know what, this is more than just about showing what survivorship is. This can really impact people. So I decided that I wanted it to be an organization. And I started growing it and got a lot of attention. A lot of people really started following the project. It started growing. And our early logo looked like American Idol. It was really ridiculous. Whatever. It was horrible.
Do you hear from that, your punk rocker edgy girl now?
No, never. I heard back once from the woman about, you know, that she went back to treatment and was in treatment, and then, you know, just lost touch with each other. It happens. There's, you know, emails back and forth all the time.
Right.
But I was really happy to hear that.
Oh, yes.
And so, you know, so then it continued to grow. Livestrong, I was selected as a delegate for the Livestrong Global Cancer Summit last year in Ireland. We went over there and met up with a lot of amazing organizations, started working with other people, and we've grown the organization from the 25th of November of 2008 to where we are now. We have around 400 people have shared their voices in video, written word. We have a conversation section where it's a side-by-side video conversation of me with someone who's dealing with cancer from this. I've talked to people in South Africa, Ireland,
wow.
England, the U.S., and so we're global in spectrum. We're adult cancer, but we're not a specific type of cancer. We don't offer solutions, treatment, options,
right.
anything. It's just really about survivorship. It's all about survivorship.
Exactly, and I think that's the point of, you know, your organization and Planet Cancer, which I didn't realize is now part of Live Strong, is that, like you said, it doesn't matter if it's breast cancer, because people always come to me and they're like, oh, yeah, I have another breast cancer survivor. It's like, okay, hooray, we have a month. You know, we get the pink ribbons and everything. Woohoo. But there's, like you said, prostate cancer, and there's so many other cancers out there, and we're all fighting for the same goal. And in my lifetime, I would love to see at least one cancer eradicated, where somebody
right.
actually says, when they said you're cured, that they mean it. You know, I don't like that word cure, you know. Because there isn't one.
Well,
we could get into a whole discussion about that. But.
Yeah, I mean, it becomes an issue as to, you know, how do we approach this? I would love for there to be a cure, but I don't see that. I mean, there's too many different types of cancer.
Right.
Cells split different ways, different types of cells, so there's never going to be one cure.
Right.
If they cured all cancers, that'd be awesome.
That
but
would be.
If we could manage them like the way that we've dealt with AIDS and deal with it as a chronic illness, manage it, and allow people to have full lives, that would be amazing.
Well, I think we're doing that. Well, I mean, I believe your organization is
not all.
Well, not
yes, some.
Yes, not all. But I mean, as far as like survivorship and helping people, I believe that your organization is one of those that does that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We don't manage it from a chronic illness standpoint. We manage it from a way for people to see that yes, once you're diagnosed, whether you've beaten cancer, you're terminal, in treatment, post treatment, recently diagnosed. You're a survivor, and once you hear those three words, you have
exactly.
cancer. That's when your survivorship clock starts. And, you know, a lot of people, part of why I did it was to remove the toxicity or kind of stigma that a lot mm-hmm. of people feel with that word survivor, the
yes.
over-commercialization of it. when I was taking some graduate film classes, I studied a class called AIDS, Mass Media, and Cultural Politics. And I look at kind of the way that we approach Voices of Survivors as the way that the group ACT UP. I don't know if you're familiar with ACT UP.
I'm not familiar.
They're a gay rights organization that came about early on during the AIDS crisis. And so they were taking back words, empowering themselves with words that people were using against them.
Oh, okay.
And so, you know, I kind of look at the structure of that a little bit, how we take the word. It's very different because survivor was never a negative word, like some of the word queer, like that's where
right.
Queer Nation and all of that came from.
But I
so
think
they took that back and said, you know what, if you call me queer, it doesn't hurt me anymore. And so now I took the mindset that survivor, a lot of people are like, well, I'm not a survivor because I didn't beat cancer. Well, let's take that and turn it around and make you think about what that word means to you and how you can see yourself. And the very first person that I shot, Craig, he has astrocytoma, and, you know, astrocytoma is a very difficult cancer. It's a brain cancer.
Oh.
And so he said he didn't see himself as a survivor because of this place that he was. And so I said, well, in order to do the project, this is about survivorship and about seeing yourself as a survivor. So let's sit and you can think about it and think about what that word means to you and learn how to embrace that word. And that's what we did. We literally sat for about 45 minutes and just talking. And he goes, you know what? I am a survivor. I know the definition that makes me a survivor.
See, and I agree with that because when I was diagnosed, 11 days after my surgery, I walked the Making Strides walk. And, you know, you sign into these walks and whatever, and they're like, you know, I said, I just had my surgery. And they're like, oh, well, you're a survivor. And I know how he feels because I was like, well, I just had surgery and I didn't really, you know, I didn't feel like he did, like, face the battle or fight the cancer or anything. I was just like, well, I don't really know what the hell's going on. You know, because like you said, when they say you have cancer and then it's like, okay, well, this is what's going to happen. Well, if it hasn't happened yet, it just looks like, holy crap, all this stuff is going to happen to me, surgery, radiation, chemo, you know, my life is going to change. I don't feel any different until it happens.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, it's one of those things that I like the NED term. I think
yes.
That's really good, the no evidence of disease. I like that because that's kind of where we really are in our survivorship. Because you really don't know. You know, we hope when they say you're cured, but then you end up with a recurrence 5 to 10 years later. Were you really cured? You don't know.
Right.
And so let's look at, you know, I'm NED. There's no evidence of disease in my body. I know that I have to deal with these focal positive margins issue. I know that I have tests every 3 months. That's where I am. But I'm living. I'm out there having a great time and trying to do as much as I can to help other people and spread the word about survivorship.
Exactly. Now tell me about your cookbook, because every time I look on Facebook, I want to come to your house and eat dinner with you.
You know, you should, because it's just me and two worthless cats here. So the cookbook started out as I really love cooking. I cook a lot. I post pictures of my food all the time. I guess
yes.
I'm kind of proud of my cooking. But it came about as just I look at different ways to spread the word about survivorship and how to talk about survivorship. So the cookbook that's coming out, it isn't just my recipes. It's a collection of recipes from various survivors. And we're still collecting recipes, but we're in production of the book now.
Excellent.
And it's recipes shared by survivors, and then they talk a little bit about their own survivorship and their own journey into it, and what the cooking process meant to them and what all of that means. It's just another vehicle to spread the word and to talk about where we are now and what it means to be a survivor.
Excellent. When do you think this book is going to come out?
We're in production now, probably the latter part of the summer, early fall. It will be for sale.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we have a few things going on. I don't know if you know, we have a film festival. Do you know about that?
I don't. Do tell.
So the first International Voices of Survivors Film Festival is going to be April 9th of 2011. We're going to launch I have all of the back end set up on Without a Box, which is a great, it's withoutabox.com, and that's where you can register to submit your films. It's a short film festival, it's not features, so we can have quite a few projects shown. It's going to be at the River Oaks Theater in Houston, is where the premiere is going to be, and then the film festival will also be online on our website, so you can see the winners and runners up for the project. But we are going to have a real film release. And the River Oaks Theater is one of the most beautiful theaters in Houston. It's a classic theater, and it's just beautiful. I love it. When I was a kid, I think the first movie that I saw there was Charlotte's Web, actually, when I was in elementary school.
So the film festival, I'm sorry, is that any topic of film?
It's about survivorship.
Okay.
It's all films about survivorship. And they can be abstract. They can be however you perceive it.
Right.
As to what that means to you. And, you know, the interest has been really great. And the support from the Houston community has been really good for it. So we're looking forward to the first festival next year.
Do you have a lot of submissions so far?
We're not accepting submissions yet. We're opening the submissions. That's what when the Without a Box opens up, that's when the submissions can start to occur. But we've made the announcement so people can start working on their projects. And then when we launch the Without a Box, then the submissions start coming through.
Well, how do you
And we'll have some good jurors and stuff. I won't be choosing all the films. I'm biased.
You are a little biased, but that's okay. Now, how do you have time to do... Now, you also train Taekwondo or Karate?
No, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah, wow. I've done it for years. It's just something that I love. There's nothing like getting on the mat and being in a combative place when you've had a pretty stressful day. It relieves stress pretty good.
Were you able to do that when you were battling cancer?
No, I took some time off. I took a few years off. And, you know, I took some time off my bike and other things. And now life's fairly back to normal. I mean, it's incredibly intense. I'm busy between photography and art, Voices of Survivors, and the athletics, all the different athletic stuff I do. I lead a pretty busy life.
You do. And I have to say that I think you and I are kind of similar. I mean, I'm a weekend warrior hockey player, but I think exercise is definitely a key. Because I'm sure that totally helped you beforehand. I mean, we don't think, oh, I'm going to have cancer, so I got to exercise. But if you just keep yourself in shape, my doctor said, you know, I think you got through this the way you did because you were in such good physical shape.
Right.
You know, and that could even just be walking. I mean, you don't have to look like, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Right.
You know, a person who's confined to a wheelchair because of whatever they've gone through, whether it was cancer or not cancer, there's always something that you can do, and it's important to maintain some sort of physical activity if you can,
right.
And also maintain, you know, mental activity. Keep your mind busy.
Exactly.
I think it's incredibly important. You know, and a lot of things, you're on my Facebook page, so you see the insanity that I have on there at times. I want to be really clear, because a lot of people, and this is a great forum for me to talk about this.
Yes.
A lot of people don't get me sometimes, because they look at my Facebook page and they think, oh, you're all over the place. You're not very serious about what you're doing, because, you know, I post so much stuff and so many different things. I make fun of my cats. I post food. I make goofy photos of myself all day. But there's logic behind what I do, actually.
Right.
I was diagnosed with cancer, and I'm showing that this is my life. This is my life post-cancer. It's kind of a fishbowl, a little bit.
Right.
You pretty much know throughout the day everything that I do.
Well, I think Facebook has brought that to everyone's attention. I mean, I didn't know about Facebook when I was going through treatment, and I wish I had.
Yeah.
You know? And,
well, it's important. I mean, you connect to different people. I have 2,800 friends. At least 2,500 of them have been touched by cancer, either personally or a relative is dealing with it at the time that we became friends. And a lot of what I do is, you know, I show my life in detail, the funny side, the parts, photos of me having my mammogram done.
Mm-hmm.
I put everything out there. But I it's also, it adds levity. You know, if you're having a really crappy day while you're going through treatment, you could probably come to my page and find some sort of levity, something to make you laugh, whether it's my cat, anything. You know, and so I'm very serious about survivorship. I'm very serious about making sure that when people look at me, that, yeah, I'm Lynn Lane. I'm the executive director, founder of Voice of Survivors. But I'm a human, and our organization is incredibly human. And if you come to Houston and you say, hey, Lynn, you want to grab a coffee? I want to be that guy that runs an organization that I'm incredibly approachable, that you can make a joke with. You can make fun of me. It's fine, because I'm just another human. I don't ever want our organization to be the one where the executive director is
untouchable.
Right.
But I think anyone who asks you to go for coffee, you'd go anyway, because I know such a coffee hound you are. So,
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it isn't. I'm not saying, well, if because of that, I just want to make sure
joking,
that people
Lynn.
See that I'm a human, you know, just
right.
I'm just like a regular guy who got cancer, and we started an organization to try to help people, and people like it. But the reality is the only reason the organization exists is because of people who share their voices, you
right.
know, and it's really everyone else's organization. That's what adds the strength to it. The 400 people who've come forward and said, hey, I want to share my experiences, whether they're survivors or co-survivors, when they've come forward to talk about it, they've touched someone, and they've made it okay for people to say, hey, I'm going through it too, and it kind of sucks.
And I think that helps a lot of people, you know, whether
yeah.
they, and I feel the same way about my blog. We never know how many people it touches until we get like an email saying, you know, that's exactly how I felt, or my friend was going through that, or I didn't know about this side effect. You know,
right.
like you will blog or do a little video about, well, you know, I'm not having such a great a day, or do, like you said, mm-hmm. something silly about your mammogram. Well, some other gentleman may find a lump in his breast and be like, oh, you know what? Well, he's getting it done. And, you know, also look at Peter Criss from Kiss. He had breast
right.
cancer. You know, I mean, you are breaking down the walls of like you said, the stigma, because there's a lot more people like us, unfortunately, that have cancer than aren't, you know, and wouldn't it be nice for someone to put us out of business?
Yeah, that would be really cool. That would be awesome. You know, I think it would be great. I think, you know, when we look at what we do, you know, it's also one of the things that's really important for me is that Voice of Survivors isn't just a cool catchphrase or anything like that. That we do something that when you look at our organization, there's really concrete evidence that
right.
you can say, hey, this is what Voice of Survivors is. You know, a lot of people right now, we're a 501c3. And to be honest, I'm not a guy, you've never seen me ask for donations or anything. I've pretty much funded Voices of Survivors myself. We've raised less than $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
We're to the point now where we really need to start raising money. We need people to help support it, because all of the efforts that we put forth to reaching out to the hospitals and providing the brochures for the oncology centers and all of those outreach efforts, you know, as we've grown, the cost and everything is growing exponentially.
Right.
And so this isn't a plea for donations, but if everybody wants to donate, they can. That'd be awesome. But, you know, that's one of the things that as a nonprofit that we're faced with is as you grow, you know, to be able to grow, your expenses are there. And with the economic climate we're in, it's really difficult.
Yes. It is difficult. But, you know, I do a lot of work with a lot of charities, and it's like you said, the economic climate is difficult, but I'm always surprised at how much people will donate if you just ask.
Yeah.
Because like they say, when I do Relay for Life or other stuff, when they say go to the local stores, there's, you know, no is never an answer unless you ask.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, and you know, that's to the point we are now. We're going to have to really push forward on the fundraising side, because it's great, and I have been able to fund it to a certain degree, but as it grows, it'll get beyond me.
Right.
And we're really a granting foundation also. We're not just the organization that you see. The whole back-end structure of Voice of Survivors is very different. I want to be able to provide grants to individuals and organizations to produce projects in the arts on survivorship. That's really what we're about. It's about outreach into hospitals and communities, as well as providing grants to people to produce arts-based projects on survivorship to be able to share with the world.
And that is so cathartic.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is. So, okay, well, if people want to donate or just get a hold of you, Lynn, then how would they do so?
On our website, voicesofsurvivors.org, there they can reach out. If you email, the emails will come directly to me, so you'll talk to me. There's also a donation spot on our page that has a PayPal link and another link that you can donate. That's Work for Good. You can donate through our cause page on Facebook, and our Facebook page is facebook.com/voicesofsurvivors, all one word. And yeah, that's how you can donate to us. We also have a store online. If you want some really cool Voice of Survivors gear and you want to rock a Voice of Survivors shirt or coffee mug, it's there.
And if you're a survivor also, you want to tell your story, you can contact.
That's the key.
Exactly.
You know, all
mm-hmm.
of the donations and everything are incredibly important. But what's most important is for people to share their voice. And that's the reality. You know, each and every voice shared can help so many and touch even more. And I always say that. It's my mantra over and over. I say that when I write people. And it's all about survivorship. That's our tagline. It's all about survivorship. And that's really what it's about. And so it isn't, if you're just recently diagnosed or you've got stage one melanoma on your fingertip and you think, well, my story's too young or it's not as strong as someone with stage four colon cancer, well, you're wrong.
Because exactly.
There are a lot of people out there with stage one melanoma who are scared to death and they're discounting their cancer or a variety of things. And if they just see this, then they know they're not alone and this is something real. And the reality is stage one melanoma will kill you just as fast as stage four colon cancer if you don't. Well, maybe not just as fast, but it will.
Right.
If you don't treat it.
Cancer
and
is
so
cancer.
Never discount your type of cancer. Never discount your survivorship experience because you own it. It's yours. Cancer is very difficult for all of us, no matter what stage we're on. You hear the word, you have cancer. It's scary.
Right. I hear you. Because all I heard was like Peanuts voices after my doctor said, it's cancer. Then everything else was like, wah, 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 staging, wah, 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 tumor. And then I was like, okay, well, I'm out of here. Bye.
I mean, I walked into my doctor's office, and the doctor who did the biopsy, he was actually down in Florida at a conference, and I recommended to go to this other doctor, too, to get another opinion. And these two doctors were friends, so he had my results faxed over from my doctor in Florida. And I'd been sitting in this doctor's office for 5-10 minutes. He picked up the fax, I looked at him, and I saw his face, and I was like, crap.
Oh, yeah.
I've got cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So he goes, Mr. Lane, can you come in my office? And he said, I hate to tell you this, but I just got your fax, and you have cancer.
Right.
I said, okay, hold on 1 minute. I stood up, I walked out in the hall, and I cried.
Mm-hmm.
I cried. I called my mother. I said, Mom, I'm scared to death. And my mom's a survivor. She had thyroid cancer, and she also had a complete hysterectomy for it with precancerous tissue, et cetera. And so,
wow. So
she's, you know, so I leaned on her, and I said, I'm scared to death. And I collected myself. I went back in and said, all right, what do we do? And then my doctor in Florida called me that night, and he said, Len, I'm so sorry you had to find out this way. He said, I was going to call you as soon as I got back in town tomorrow, have you come to my office. So then I went to Dr. Hall's office, and he was awesome. You know, we laid down all the different treatment options, and I went with the surgery because it was the most logical. And the funny thing about the surgery is Dr. Samadi, who is my surgeon, I saw on, there's a channel in New York called New York One. It's a local news channel.
Right, I think
and
I
watched
it.
Dr. Samadi talk on there the year before, and I said, you know what, I'm going to get prostate cancer, and that's going to be the doctor that I use.
Really?
Yeah, it's very
profound. Now you have to think that you're going to win the lottery, or someone's going to hear this podcast, and they're going to just donate a ton of money to Voices of Survivorship, because, you know, like I said, we're all...
Voices of Survivors.
Voices of Survivors. Sorry about that. See, I told you I have chemo brain.
That's all right. We were Voice of Survivorship yesterday at Herman Memorial also. I walked in, it was Herman Memorial Survivors Day, and I went up to our table where our booth was and stuff, and it said Voice of Survivorship. I'm like, you know, I'm cursed with this, Voices of Survivorship. So,
but, you know,
they changed it.
That's okay. Voices of Survivors is the name of your organization. We
it
found
is.
Out how to get a hold of you, and thanks for joining me today, Len. This was very informative. I had no idea about prostate cancer. This is one of the reasons why I love this podcast, because I can find out more about different things and different people and different organizations such as yourself, and hoping that at least one person will listen to this and say, well, you know what, I think my voice deserves to be heard, and I want to tell my story, and then they'll contact you.
That would be great. Now, honestly, I can't thank you enough for having me on here. You've been a really cool friend on Facebook and Twitter. And
yes.
So now getting to talk with you and be on your podcast is awesome.
Yes.
Thank you enough.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to wrap up like I usually do. This is The Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie, like Lynn said. You can join the fan page or like it or whatever they're going to call it next, The Cancer Warrior, on empowerradio.com. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com. And you know what? Life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting. Sending you good vibes. It's The Cancer Warrior on empowerradio.com.